The first question is about what we see right now in Cairo. Terrible images with street fights, hundreds of wounded. What's next in Egypt? What will the army do from your information?
I think that the unrest and the clashes that we are seeing, especially today, stem from the desire of President Mubarak to be able to stay in power for as long as possible. But the thing is that, as you ask in your question, the key thing is the army. What will the army do? The army has already made it very clear that they are not going to use force against protesters. So if the situation of unrest continues, the army will have no choice but to ask President Mubarak to resign. And once that resignation takes place, now that could happen in days, it could stretch on for weeks, it's just not clear at this point. Things, move very rapidly, and then there are periods of lull, so we really can't put a timeline on it. But once that happens, I mean, that's the thing that we're watching, when Mubarak will essentially throw in the towel. Once he is gone, then we enter into a new chapter of this story. And that is about the formation of a neutral caretaker government. Now, Mubarak will leave, but the NDP government that has been in power, supported by the military, will stay. And there are already signs that the opposition is saying they're willing to negotiate with Vice President Omar Suleiman. And those negotiations will be critical, because what they will be about are the formation of a neutral caretaker government. There will be a lot of debate as to who is included in that caretaker government. I suspect that pretty much all the major opposition forces would like to be part of that interim administration. So that's one part, the composition of the interim government. Secondly, what will be the powers of those interim government? What will be the mandate? Will it be to hold elections within 6 months or at some point in time in the future? Or will it also entail rewriting the constitution? We already have a parliament that's dominated by President Mubarak's party, and I suspect that it's going to be very difficult for the opposition to accept that the new constitution be written by the current parliament. So there are all sorts of these questions that need to be resolved, and so we could look at a very long period of negotiations. And if those negotiations do not quickly reach some sort of a resolution, or at least don't appear to be moving towards a resolution, we could see the unrest accelerate or come back to life. Because once President Mubarak is gone, we can expect the protests to calm down, even if it is temporarily. But the real thing is not whether President Mubarak stays or not. He is likely leaving. The question is one of time. It's not of if, but when. Once he's out, then comes the critical phase.
Do you see Vice President Omar Suleiman as the key person for the next months to come? Or is somebody else in a better position than him in the future negotiations?
I think that he will be one of the critical players, though he doesn't have experience in negotiating on the domestic front. He has experience in negotiating and mediating between the Israelis and the Palestinians and between the two Palestinian factions, Hamas and Fatah. So he's going to be an important figure, but he may not be the only one. Why do I say that? Is because Vice President Suleiman has a bad reputation amongst the Egyptian people. He was head of the most feared instrument of the state, its intelligence service, for a very long time. And so there are all sorts of questions. And once President Mubarak steps down, that will give a huge moral boost to the public and to the opposition. And then they will think that if they can bring down Mubarak, then they can easily dictate terms to his successors. So there may be other people, but I suspect the key people to watch for is Defense Minister, who was actually promoted to, also given the portfolio of Deputy Prime Minister this past weekend, Field Marshal Mohammad Hussein Tandawi, who is also the Commander-in-Chief of the Egyptian Armed Forces, and then the Army Chief, Lieutenant General Anan. So I think that we need to keep an eye on the military. They will play a role behind the scenes and like to keep Omar Suleiman in the front. But let's see to what extent that is possible.
Once President Mubarak will leave the position, it will be the second victory in the region, the victory of the street. Who's next? Is Colonel Muammar Gaddafi?
Well, it's very difficult to say. Each country is very different. Unlike you're in Romania, and you probably remember the 1989 revolutions. Unlike those, we're not looking necessarily at a domino effect here. Of course, after Tunisia and now Egypt, everybody's worried. But every country is actually different. So the way this unrest manifests, is going to be slightly different. So, for example, in Jordan, the protesters are not calling for the end of the monarchy. They're not calling for the downfall of the king. They're trying to negotiate over fuel and food prices and electoral reforms. So the unrest is manifesting very differently than it is in Egypt than it was in Tunisia. In Libya, Colonel Gaddafi is in a relatively comfortable position for three reasons. One, his population is very small. It's only 6.5 million people. Two, the country has enormous oil and gas wealth. So when you have money, you can throw it at the problem. Three, Colonel Gaddafi's government has roots in the public through those local committees that are tied into the government. The whole concept of Jamaria, as Colonel Gaddafi enunciated it in his Green Book, that's played a key role in Colonel Gaddafi being able to maintain power. So yes, there is the threat, but then we need to be able to keep that into context. I would keep my eye on two countries, Yemen. Notice today President Ali Abdullah Saleh announced that he will not seek another term in the 2013 elections. This comes within hours of President Hosni Mubarak saying the same thing about himself. The Yemeni president is also calling for electoral reforms, and Yemen is already, even if it didn't have this unrest, even if there was no Tunisia, Yemen was already in a lot of trouble because it's facing three different insurgencies. There is the jihadist insurgency led by Al-Qaeda. There is the southern secessionist movement that wants to secede from the north. And in the north, you have the rebellion by the Zaydi al-Houthi tribal sectarian elements. So there were already three major fault lines that the Yemeni government was facing. And Yemen is a little different than Egypt in the sense that in Egypt, if Mubarak goes, the state is still there. It's just one person leaving.
And let's
the army is
for...
there, the apparatus is there, everything is there, and it's not as if it's going to be lead to complete anarchy. In Yemen, the fear is that Ali Abdullah Saleh is the longest-serving president of the modern Yemeni Republic, and he has been the president of Yemen as we know it today, you know, the united Yemen that unified back in the 90s. And so if he leaves, what happens? And there's already democracy in that country to a significant degree, much more than Egypt. So if democracy is not working and Saleh leaves or is not no longer around or the unrest becomes too much, then Yemen is, you know, at risk of becoming kind of like Afghanistan, if you will. So those are the fears. Syria is another country that needs to be watched because a small minority of 15 to 20% Alawites have been ruling in an authoritarian manner over an 80%, 85% Sunni country. And it's a very close society. It's perhaps the most totalitarian in all of the Middle East. And so we need to see how Syria unfolds. So that's sort of my regional prognosis.
Still, we have right now a key player in the region whose increasing influence is quite obvious. It's about the Muslim Brotherhood. Do you feel that this increasing influence is a real danger for the interest and security of the region, of the USA or the rest of the world?
No, I don't think so, because there is the fear of the Muslim Brotherhood because of the complex Islamist jihadist phenomenon that has historically developed in Egypt. You know, Egypt is the country where Arab nationalism was born, Islamism was born, jihadism was born. All these ideologies were born in Egypt. So that really clouds the sort of general perception of people from the outside about what the Muslim Brotherhood is all about. I'm not sure if you've seen our report. We just published a report a little while ago, a major work on the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yes,
you may want to take
yes,
a look at
yes.
it. To answer your question, the Muslim Brotherhood is not going to radicalize the region because it's very different from Al-Qaeda. It's very different from other radical movements. It wants to basically win elections and come to power. It believes in democracy, but the question is there's never been any elections in Egypt, so it's an untested theory as to what will really happen. How will they really behave? Will they behave responsibly and not? I think a more realistic threat is a government that contains a significant Muslim Brotherhood share can be expected to pursue a more independent foreign policy, moving Cairo away from its alignment with Washington that we've seen since the mid-70s. So that's a concern for the United States. And then a government composed of Muslim Brotherhood people in Egypt could become much more tough with Israel. I'm not saying that they will completely abrogate the peace treaty with Israel, but we can see them adopting a much more tough attitude towards Israel, and it complicates the Israeli-Palestinian issue, and it has implications for Israeli security. So those dynamics are there, but we're not looking at a radicalization or jihadization of the region.
Speaking about the United States, is Egypt Obama's 1979?
I tend to avoid those kind of comparisons because there's a huge difference in the two circumstances. While there is a basic similarity that the United States didn't prepare for the possibility that the Mubarak regime would one day fall, kind of like what was happening in Iran in 1979. Yes. But there are huge differences because the CIA completely missed the 1979 revolution. So no one was aware. In fact, when the Shah was coming to power, most people in the United States government were thinking, you know, the Shah is still safe. But here, I think the United States has learned the lesson, though it didn't prepare in advance. But I think that they did learn a lesson from the 1979 revolution and are now quickly adjusting to realities. If you notice how President Obama spoke last night, it's clear that, you know, he's trying to manage the situation. It's not like they're waiting for everything to collapse and then try to do something, because in Iran, that was the case. In Egypt, I think they've been trying to manage the process ever since it became, at least over the past 2 to 3 weeks, perhaps even longer. And they've been working with the military to ensure as much stability as possible and an orderly transition to the degree that it is possible.
But in the last 3 days, we've heard America administration speaking with three voices. Mr. Joe Biden said that Hosni Mubarak is not a dictator. Hillary Clinton said, yes, he is. President Obama last night was some between, and he asked for a quick change of the regime. How do you assess United States administration position towards Egypt these days? Are they preparing something to put instead of Hosni Mubarak regime?
I think that the United States is trying to work with the military, as I mentioned earlier. Now, in terms of the variant statements coming from different officials, you know, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, and the president, I think there are a number of reasons that can explain that. One is that this is a time of commotion. Nobody really has a really good clear picture because things are happening so fast, and there's all sorts of information flowing because of the proliferation of electronic media, that it's really difficult for everyone to be on the same page. And then there are differences of opinion within an administration, especially one as large as the United States government. And so it's a way of managing. I mean, these variances that we see in statements are also a function of the government trying to manage the situation. As far as what will come, I think the United States hopes that the military can shepherd, can oversee some sort of orderly, if you will, transition to a more democratic arrangement in Cairo. Now, with that democratic arrangement, you have the possibility of the Muslim Brotherhood coming in as well. But I think that what the United States would be is hoping for is that the Muslim Brotherhood does not become the dominant group. In other words, it is circumscribed by other forces as well, civilian and military.
There are voices in Europe, especially here in Eastern Europe, that are saying that U.S. are heading toward isolationism. Is it?
No, I don't think so. I think those are blown out of proportion. Those fears are not realistic. I don't think the United States is going to head towards isolation. I think that the United States is definitely facing challenges, especially in the Middle East and South Asia, because of the events of September 11 and what has happened since then. Even before this public unrest that has broken out in the Arab world, the United States was already dealing with a very difficult situation with Iran, especially in Iraq. There is also the Afghanistan-Pakistan situation. So I think the number of challenges are increasing, but I don't see the United States isolating itself from them.
Do you see in the years to come a dramatic change of the global balance of powers?
Well, global balance of power is always evolving, is always a very dynamic thing. And over, you know, the long term, of course, you know, their balances of power are shifting. I mean, just look at what has happened since the U.S. overthrow of the Saddam government. Iran has been empowered. The coming to power of the AKP government in Turkey has led Turkey to become more assertive on the foreign policy front. So all sorts of changes happen. So yes, you know, the balance of power continues to evolve and reshape itself. But I don't think that the U.S. position as the dominant global power will change simply because it has the largest economy. It's a $14 trillion economy, notwithstanding the debt and the economic conditions that we're currently facing here. But the bottom line is, you know, the next several countries do not produce that kind of a GDP. And then the world is so globally interdependent. I mean, there's always the debate that China is rising. But China is linked into the U.S. economy. China has its internal problems. There's also the discussion of China being in a bubble and the bubble bursting sometime soon. So I don't think that the overall balance will change. Certainly, the world will become more complicated and the United States will have to deal with more challenges.
How would you assess the job that CIA, Mossad and the rest of the secret services did in Egypt? Because it appeared that the political leaders of those countries were quite surprised by the events.
I think that the Egyptian Mukhabarat and the other Arab intelligence services, they certainly didn't foresee this happening. If they did, they would have advised differently. They were living in an old paradigm, thinking that the masses will not rise. But then Tunisia happened, and you know, everything flowed from there. As far as American and Israeli intelligence is concerned, I think that they probably had an idea, and we see from WikiLeaks that the United States was concerned about where Egypt was headed. And mind you, this is not in Egypt. What has happened is not something that happened all of a sudden. Even if protests didn't take place, President Mubarak was already on his way out because of his advanced age and ill health. And there was already a succession struggle going on between the elite in Cairo as to who will succeed President Mubarak, the army pushing against Gamal, against other people, and President Mubarak's family and his close allies pushing in another direction. This was already taking place, and I think that everybody was well aware. I think what took everybody by surprise was the fact that people actually came out on the streets and in such large numbers. Mm-hmm.